Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning. First of all, thanks to the Institute for organizing this conference. And as you said, the interaction of different instruments surely is one chance to proceed in this matter. Ladies and gentlemen, heavy metal. Well, what does that have to do with this conference and the theme? Well, Basel not only has three of the most renowned museums you will see this afternoon, the Baylor Museum with the most beautiful architecture, the Museum of Kulturen, not as nice as the Rietberg Museum in Zurich, this is a Zurich person who says that, but one of the most renowned, and the Antiken Museum where the object is in the center of the attention. But what not many people know, that Basel, outside Basel, is the best heavy metal club of all of Europe. And that's why yesterday I left a little bit earlier to attend a good concert. But heavy metal also has something to do with what we are talking today, protection of cultural goods in conflict situations. Well, there with heavy metal, culture is destroyed, culture is at danger, and we see how important these matters are. Camiray, our Federal Council of Exterior Affairs, just pointed out the importance of all the conventions protecting people. And, well, I hope the cultural minister will also point out the importance of protecting cultural goods in time of conflict. We all have seen the catastrophes have taken place in Iraq, Georgia, and other countries. Interesting, in the regulation of cultural protection in armed conflict is the 1954 convention. And one state party that is very, very young is the US. They just joined this year. Well, perhaps this is a good sign that they won't go in new war activities because they could get in trouble. Perhaps you remember the US were always against acceding to this convention because the generals always told the president, well, we want to be able to bomb the Kremlin. And so they didn't want to accede to this convention. Yesterday we had many talks about provenance, many talks about what is provenance. There is a museum here in Basel who has a very special connubium with provenance. And that was very controversial. The people of you who go to the tropics know that there is a saying, cook it, peel it, or forget it. Well, with archaeological findings, it's the same thing. Ask for provenance. If there is no answer or clear provenance, just forget it. And I believe this is a very basic fact we have to keep in mind when discussing those topics. Another topic that arose, and I cite my colleague from before, is the question of inventories and question of lists of stolen goods databases. And I fully agree with my colleague here from Basel, from the art trade, that there is need for a top database which takes into account all the existing databases. A slight detail, I hope, we will hear from the art trade is, well, they finance it because they need it. And it's very interesting that the art trade, who normally asks for less state and that the state does not interfere with the business, here comes and asks for more state. So yes to a big database, but pay for it yourself. Another topic was the good faith acquisition, and In Switzerland, it's quite clear. The Federal Tribunal very clearly stated when you are in good faith and if you don't ask the relevant questions, not only looking in the database, but asking the right questions. For instance, if you are a dealer in a specific field, well, if your alarm bells don't ring and all the red flags go on, if you have Iraqi goods, etc., etc., or Italian or Greek artifacts, well, then you cannot be in good faith. And I cite a very well-known Geneva collector who has a special connubium with New Zealand, and he once publicly said, well, in archaeology there is no good faith. So he must know it, he is one of the biggest antique collectors. Well, the provenances in court, we have heard the proof is difficult. Well, we have to know, either do we want to protect the person who has been stolen something, or we want to protect the buyer. It's always question of interest balance, and in Switzerland these interest balance is very well done in our civil code. Perhaps also here, just to remember the databases. Database is very good if it's for stolen goods. With stolen goods you can report and have it in there, but for excavated goods and illicitly exported goods is useless. So it is half true to say, if I as a dealer just check all the databases, I am clear. No, you're half clear. And as you see in the Swiss and other tribunals, how they decided, it is very clear that this goes into this direction. I take up also the question of how much we can learn about from the money laundering and compliance. I will call it, to paraphrase yesterday, industry, how much we can learn from that. I believe, like my colleague before said, very much. It is interesting on the level of the European Union, we have a directive that goes into this direction. I'm sure my colleague afterwards will go into depth. It is also interesting to know that in Switzerland there was a different steps to go into this direction on a federal level to include not only sales of yachts, horses and diamonds, but also the art trade unto the legislation of money laundering. It did not happen until today. So. And with the same arguments you faced 20 years ago when you introduced, it was introduced, the money laundering. It's also very interesting, the same arguments, when I elaborated the law, the same arguments were used 20 years ago and now, as Marc-André Renault said, with the Geneva case of the bell, if you read the proceedings of the day, of the parliament in those days, well, the same arguments as we have today arise. So yes, I believe we can learn a lot, and we're very happy that the Institute goes into this direction. Also to take away a lot of misunderstandings that have been done in the bank sector, where we see that also there is a lot of learning to be done. Marc-André Renault also, with his case, showed something very interesting in resolving cultural issues when it's about objects of highly emotional and identity level. You spoke about copy of the bell. We had the same question, as you said, with Zurich Sangal. There was this globe of 1500, and one of the solutions was that the state who stole it made a replica of it, and a replica that was functioning. There's a whole mechanism in this replica that turns the planets and everything. And the Zurich people afterwards said, well, we'd rather have kept the replica and not this old stuff. Also because with the replica, there were over 100 craftsmen and craftswomen who experienced the same work that 500 years before has been done. And there is also a chance for cultural discussions, cultural development. So I believe also in the field, we heard it with UNESCO, in moderating, mediating, in the Elgin marbles or the Parthenon frieze. I believe this is a topic that also should continue in this direction. Well, to conclude, we will have the two workshops. We heard heavy metal in conflict situations, but also in recovery of cultural goods, money laundering, and I would say also persecution of criminals. This is a big issue. We have seen Mr. Schulz in New York has been put to prison because he treated archaeological objects from Egypt, Miss Mariam True, and other very famous people of renewed museums like the Getty are getting into trouble. Italy clearly has a clear strategy to visit all the antique museums, and I'm sure there will also be sometimes a visit in Basel. And also there, and let me finish with that, we only can hope that those who break the law, who are not compliant with the basics of law, the basics of a cultural law and the culture of law, that those people go behind prison bars, heavy metal prison bars. Thank you very much.